My name's Eva, and you're tuned into episode 2 of What's the Story? This is a show where we dive into the history behind a genre, a musical event, or phenomenon, anything really, and then I make a little playlist for you alongside that. So today, it is actually a SOCAN period at the station, which means that we attempt to highlight Canadian content. And so what I initially thought of to do for the SOCAN episode was shoegaze, because I know that there's a really prevalent shoegaze scene here in Vancouver and in Canada. So I did some digging on the genre, which is something that I was aware of vaguely. I don't think I had a full understanding of the actual like characteristics of the genre, but I knew that I listened to music that would constitute shoegaze, and then I'd been to shows and stuff. So I knew like what it felt like, but not necessarily how to articulate that. So let's just jump right in. I've got some good songs for you today. I'm kind of breaking it up into the formation of the genre and some of the like original most important artists. And those aren't necessarily Canadian artists, but it's important to understand the genre to have a few of those people played. And then we're going to move on to a more Canadian focused segment of the playlist, which will be more indie stuff from around Vancouver, where I'm from, and then there's some Montreal and Toronto artists as well. Well, shoegaze as a genre is under the umbrella of indie alternative, and more specifically, it's derived from or influenced by dream pop and psychedelia and post-punk especially. And if you're into some of the more niche stuff, then maybe this will mean something to you, but space rock and ethereal wave too are very close, like sister genres, I would say. If there's one main telltale characteristic of shoegaze, it's the heavy usage of effects pedals, so distortion and reverb especially, and the soundscape, which is that idea of the texture and environment that you've created with the sound. It's more important in most cases than the vocals, which tend to be pretty obscured in a lot of the material. In mixing, the genre takes from Phil Spector, if you know Phil Spector, gross person, but interesting concept that he created for music in general, which is the wall of sound concept. And that came up during his career in the 60s and 70s. He was doing mixing for a lot of really prominent artists like David Bowie, the Ronettes, who else? I think the Talking Heads. So anyways, and the wall of sound was this idea of using like really dense instrumentals and combining them in a way so that you kind of couldn't distinguish from the individual components. And it was really meant to just hit you in the face with this wall of sound. And this really rich texture that comes out of using that method is so important to shoegaze. Artists will often go one step further and actually use their vocals as more of an instrument rather than something to deliver words with. And they're able to mix the vocals as really another layer of indistinguishable sound and instrumental. One more thing that's not required at all, but is very common, I found, is that shoegaze bands frequently feature sopranos, and that really gives it that, like, spacey, ethereal feel, which is really important to a lot of band sounds. And some good examples of that, if you wanted to look into it, would be Slow Dive and the Cocteau Twins, who are two of my favorite bands within this genre. That's not, you know, a hot take. I feel like a lot of people really enjoy, especially the Cocteau Twins. So to get a little bit of a taste for some of these elements that I was kind of talking about, we will start with the opening track for the Scottish band, the Cocteau Twins, and this is off of their album Heaven or Las Vegas, which was released in 1990, and this is called Cherry Colored Funk.
Thank you.
that's a pretty landmark album for the genre, and I would just highly, highly recommend giving the whole thing a listen. It's one of my favorites, like I mentioned, and I'm really not alone in that. It's definitely picked up a lot of steam, too, I think, in my circle. I see a lot of people talking about it, posting about it, kind of giving it that recognition 20 years later, which I think is cool. And I'm sure that's as a result of the kind of resurgence of shoegaze that we've seen in indie music in the past 10 years or so. And then next, I wanted to give a little bit of context about the musical landscape when and where shoegaze was starting out. So the first glimpses of shoegaze, it was kind of starting in the late 80s, but really like picked up steam in the early 90s. And then, like I said, just again recently in the 2010s, which is pretty cool, but it did trickle off in the late 90s. This is something I didn't know. The name comes from performers' usage of those effects pedals that I mentioned. And so when they were performing, it was a lot to kind of manage, and they would be staring down at their feet during a lot of the show, and they were not really known for an energetic or lively or engaging performance so much. They're pretty heavily concentrating on what they were doing. And so then those acts would be called shoegazers, and the genre was known as shoegazing or shoegaze. Now, while it did have old roots in the 80s, the genre was not really one of the largest indie or alternative movements of the 90s. I'm sure you could guess what they were. The top-selling indie or alternative albums of the decade, it's kind of split between two discernible genres. Of course, there was like way more going on in terms of the musical scene, but in terms of top-selling and most popular, well-known genres, it would definitely be one, that harder alt-rock grunge style, like we're talking Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins, Nine Inch Nails, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, any of those. And then the somewhat opposing sound of indie lo-fi, if you ever, like, you know those witty dad rock types, like Wilco or Pavement or Neutral Milk Hotel, which was really kind of widely received as one of the first indie albums. So indie was really popping off, and so was grunge. And so with that mainstream preference in mind, shoegaze was kind of pushed aside to an extent, but we still see bands like My Bloody Valentine, which was a band formed in 1983 in Dublin. They made a huge impact on the alternative scene, and not only in terms of their own audience, but the actual other creators of the time. And that's a really interesting story, kind of thinking about who was influenced by My Bloody Valentine and shoegaze. But before we jump into that, I will just give you a song by My Bloody Valentine to give you some context here. This is off their massively influential 1991 LP called Loveless, and this song is Only Shallow.
Yeah.
It really, really is required listening to dive into that whole album, I would say, because it is so widely recognized as, like, the most important shoegaze album. As I said, not only for the genre itself, but for the whole alternative environment at the time. So I said that there was lots of people who were influenced by My Bloody Valentine. And so let's give you some examples, because I think that's fun. So Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins, which is one of my favorite bands, stated that he tried to reflect their sound in the 1991 record Gish, and he called it a complete ripoff of the MBV sound from their first album, which was called Isn't Anything. I also noticed a pretty significant stylistic borrowing from Loveless in the Pumpkins' other works, too. I went back and re-listened to Siamese Dream, which is a great record, but if you listen to Sometimes, which is a song off Loveless, it straight up feels like it was cut out of the B-side of Siamese Dream, so it's very fun to listen to that with that context in mind. Courtney Love also said that she mimicked their sound in Celebrity Hole, which was a massive album. And Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails and The Edge from U2 also cited My Bloody Valentine as influences in their work in the 90s. Now, there were other shoegaze and shoegaze adjacent bands making pretty big waves on the scene, like Blur and The Verve and Dinosaur Jr. as well. But they weren't really like shoegaze bands. They were kind of shoegaze light. They had elements of it, and you could see why they might be coined with the term, but no one really was describing them as a shoegaze band, if that makes sense. So overall, there wasn't a breadth of shoegaze identifying bands in the 90s with mainstream success. Certainly not as much as grunge and lo-fi indie. And funnily enough, My Bloody Valentine never achieved much mainstream success, even though their sonic influence was so entrenched in the musical zeitgeist, with all of these artists citing them as huge influences. Regardless, though, for critics and for people involved in the scene, Loveless did go down in history as one of the most seminal works for the shoegaze genre, and really a timeless piece outside of that, too. In fact, it is named the second best album of the 90s on Pitchfork's Top 100 list after Radiohead's OK Computer, which I thought was pretty cool. Alright, so let's jump into one more song. This is by the London band Lush, who was another one of the most important early shoegaze bands. This is called Sweetness and Light off of their 1990 release Gala. Thank you. Hey, welcome back. And you just heard Sweetness and Light by Lush, which is a super sick band that I recently got into last year without knowing that they were so prominent within shoegaze. I actually initially fell in love with their 1996 album, which is called Love Life. And I didn't really think, even after doing this research, that it would be categorized as shoegaze. It does make use of distortion, but otherwise I don't think it's the best example, which is fair enough. Like, artists jump genres all the time. So this one album that we played off of, Gala, is definitely known as a pretty important shoegaze album, but Love Life certainly would not. However, it is an insanely good album and I really would recommend it. It is one of my favorites from the 90s. So a band that Lush was really heavily influenced by was called Susie and the Banshees. And actually, Lush's original band name was a reference to one of the Banshees' lyrics. The Banshees were a post-punk gothic new wave band, which was interestingly also a reference for the Cocteau Twins and a bunch of other of those massive bands operating within the genre of trip hop, new wave, synth pop, etc. So all of those elements are really readily visible in shoegaze as well. So that band would be a nice little supplementary listen to, really, to understand the genre of shoegaze. I've been name-dropping a few other important bands from the movement, so here's a bit more of an exhaustive list of kind of the widely accepted key players within the genre. So firstly, it's gotta be My Bloody Valentine. They really mastered the concept of creating textured, all-encompassing music with that wall of sound concept that we talked about. They took influence, just like everybody else, from post-punk and goth rock, but more uniquely, they also took from hip-hop and the culture of sampling, and also the UK's jungle and drum and bass scene. From the song that I played you earlier, you'll note how the vocals were pretty low in the mix at times and really were intended to be used as another instrument rather than conveying like any kind of narrative or message. And I actually remember seeing that Spotify and MBV got into a bit of a social media scuffle because Spotify literally could not make sense of the lyrics in the My Bloody Valentine songs. And so the band was pretty upset when they had all of these incorrect lyrics listed. So Kevin Shields is the guitarist and the guy kind of in charge of the vibes of My Bloody Valentine. And he said this about Loveless: "It was mixed in a certain way so your mind could easily focus on differences. There's nothing obvious to focus on." And I thought that was a really great way to describe their sound. So next time you're listening, keep that in mind. All right, next we heard from the Cocteau Twins, a personal fave of mine, and they definitely had a bit of a new wave sound at times, which is unsurprising, right? Because they were originated in, what did I say, 83? So in the 80s in the UK, which would make sense. There's also the bands Ride, Lush, and Slowdive. And I really think that those would constitute the big five of early shoegaze. Slowdive is also another one of my favorites. They've kind of got this beach house vibe to them, and their sound is so insanely textured and like dizzying, and their layering is really iconic. A good demonstration of that would be their 1993 record called Souvlaki. Space Station is a song off that, for example, and it just builds and builds around the middle of the song, and the controlled complexity of that song is so, so satisfying. I'll give you a taster of Slowdive and from that album, Souvlaki. This is a track called Allison, and I'd pay special attention to how they make use of that aspect of the vocals being used as an instrument, and especially to the layering of those vocals. One of the vocal components is more of the lead, and it does include the content, but the other is more of an unintelligible vocal track, and it's more of a supporting role and is used basically as an instrument. So yeah, this is Allison by Slowdive.
Listen, call, listen, don't be stopped. I'll be here in the morning.
Today we are talking about the history of shoegaze. If you're just tuning in now, you've missed the old school history about the origin in the 90s, but not to fear because we still have lots of music to play from a Canadian perspective. I'm focusing for this SoCan episode to try and highlight some contemporary Canadian shoegaze artists. One other little note I wanted to make, some other pretty important bands, maybe not the top five, but important bands nonetheless, were Swerve Driver, Catherine Wheel, Blonde Redhead, and Chapter House. So if you're interested in listening to some more shoegaze stuff, those would be starting places. Now, unfortunately, Canada was not a major player in all of this in the 90s. The sound originated in the UK, and then the US also picked it up pretty quickly, but there were not a lot of Canadian bands really working on this sound at the time. There are lots of American bands who incorporated the sound using that in their own work outside of the genre, and then there were lots of American bands actually working on shoegaze records. But Canada was not really on the same wavelength there. However, in the past 10 years, Canada has seen a lot of really fantastic shoegaze bands pop up. Like I was mentioning earlier, in Vancouver, where I'm from, and Montreal. And that's, like I said, why I initially got the idea to cover shoegaze on our SoCan episode, because I knew that there would be plenty of great tracks for me to include on the Canadian portion of this playlist. So let's jump into a Canadian shoegaze band. And if you know me, you know who I'm going to have to play first. This is Sleepy Gonzales with Slow Apocalypse off of their 2020 album of the same name.
Through
Sleepy G does live performances so well, which I can imagine isn't easy. But if you've ever been to a shoegaze show, I think you know the hype. It's a very, very different experience from any other genres, in my experience at least, because it's meant to play loud and it's invasive and it's absorbent and just riveting. So it's funny because you could have one person absolutely violently moshing to the sound while the person beside them is absolutely disassociating and zoning out to some spot on the ceiling. And I would be the latter most of the time. People who do it really well, I think, and well to my taste, let me preface that, just make this sort of alien music that is so beautiful and warm, but also super harsh and unsettling. And I love that dichotomy in the genre. It really is one of my favorites to see live. So here's a band that I would love to see live. It is Tallies. They're from Toronto, and this is their 2021 single, No Dreams of Fairs.
Crashes deep.
So you just heard Dreams of Fairies by Tallies, a Toronto band, and then after that was Dispel by Mesa Luna, which is actually a local project taken on by Justice McClellan, and he's actually a member of one of my favorite local bands, Blue Jay, who's not necessarily a shoegaze band, but that was a cool realization that I came to actually in putting this show together, so that was fun. Next up, we have a song by The Hope Slide, a band from obviously the Lower Mainland, that's a pretty iconic name, but Vancouver specifically. And then this track is off of their 2010 debut self-title, which is centered around other disasters. It's an interesting lesson. So this song is called Prince William Sound. All right, I hope you enjoyed that. You listened to The Hope Slide with their song The Prince William Sound, and then after that was Watch Me Fall by Sean Spherick. So that wraps up our segment on the history of shoegaze. I hope that you learned something or found a song that you liked or found something interesting that you wanted to do some more research on. It's a pretty cool genre, and I like that it's, you know, it's not exclusive to itself. Artists can incorporate shoegaze and have incorporated shoegaze into a variety of other genres, and you can have something really spacey and soft and somber, or you can have something really grungy and intense. And I love that duality there. It definitely doesn't limit itself to a certain kind of audience, which is always really positive in a genre, in my opinion. Need a little time to rest your mind.